counter charges eyed against the police by a whistleblower who ended up being charged in the vaccine slot for sale scheme. The U.S. will reportedly donate 500 million more COVID-19 vaccine doses to the world. Later on in the program, we'll speak to PETA infectious disease expert Dr. Anna Ong Lim on concerns surrounding the inoculation of teens and children against the coronavirus. And Philippine Senator Nancy Binay rejects the offer of the opposition coalition to become one of its possible presidential candidates. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. From whistleblower to suspect, Nina Elaine Cabrera, the CEO of a local makeup brand, slams the Philippine police for dragging her name into the alleged sale of COVID-19 vaccination slots. See, on Wednesday, Police Chief Guillermo Eleazar identified her as one of the three suspects. That's after an investigation by the anti-cybercrime group indicated she offered to sell 50 to 100 vaccine slots in Mandaluyong City. But Cabrera denies this. She points out she was the one who reported the scheme.
I was really looking to buy vaccines for my employees. I saw a for sale post online and then I inquired. And then I found out that they were actually selling not vaccines, but vaccine slots from LGUs. Mm-hmm. So what I did was I took it to Twitter. Nobody ever reached out to me, which is why I was really surprised when I saw the article yesterday. Nobody asked me questions or asked me anything about it. I was only in touch with San Juan LGU upon posting it on May 21, and that was it. They even thanked me for the information that I gave them.
The PNP spokesperson admits they never got the side of Cabrera and that their basis for charging her was her use of her social media accounts to allegedly sell COVID-19 vaccines. Cabrera, along with two other male suspects, have been charged with estafa and with violating the laws against red tape and cybercrime prevention. Cabrera says she will file countercharges against the police as soon as she can prove her innocence. The Philippine Senate Committee of the Whole wants an investigation into the Budget Department's request for an additional 25 billion pesos in funds for the country's vaccination drive. See, some senators are questioning how the government allocated the existing 82.5 billion pesos in vaccine funds under the 2021 General Appropriations Act and the Bayanihan to Recover as One Act. Senator Francis Panginginan says the Senate committee might start tackling that request during its recess.
We'd like to know what happened to the 82.5 billion.
Yeah,
why is there a request for an additional 25 billion when the existing 82.5 billion vaccine purchases have yet to materialize?
The Philippines receiving over 3.2 million additional doses of the COVID-19 vaccine Thursday. 1 million doses from Sinovac arrived in Manila this morning. This brings the total number of Sinovac shots in the country to over 6 million. Meanwhile, 2.2 million Pfizer jabs from the COVAX facility scheduled to arrive this evening. Vaccine Chief Carlito Galvez Jr. says the vaccines will be distributed to provinces where many senior citizens and people with comorbidities have yet to be vaccinated. The U.S. is reportedly buying 500 million doses of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine to donate to the world. Sources told Reuters the Biden administration will likely distribute 200 million shots this year and another 300 million in the first half of next year. The donation will go to 92 lower-income countries and the African Union via the COVAX facility. Biden will reportedly announce that plan on Thursday at the G7 meeting in the U.K., Washington is already sharing 80 million COVID-19 vaccine doses worldwide by the end of this month. The Philippines will be among the first recipients of that donation. More establishments are offering discounts to discourage the fully inoculated against COVID-19. Here's Alvin El Chico with a full story.
Senior citizen Erlinda Varances enjoyed her discounted meal in his buffet restaurant after presenting her vaccine card. To boost COVID vaccination, the restaurant is offering 50% discount to the vaccinee who can bring someone who will pay in full.
Basta na makaka-encourage kung ano, 25% na lang yung babayaran.
The restaurant owner says, is their small way of helping government convince people to get vaccinated?
Our belief is that through mass vaccination, equals a small step towards normalcy. And that's what's important for us. It's very important for us to look at this long term also, that mass vaccination is truly the way for us to move forward.
In the supermarket, a vaccinated person gets a free dessert if the total purchase reaches 250 pesos. Gab Fuentes got a couple of banana fritters after presenting two separate receipts.
Yung foot traffic ng like sa grocery, and makikita nila na may promo na ganun. Tapos convenient kasi you can have your vaccine upstairs, I mean within the building. So, nakainganyo rin siya actually.
In this department store, there's a rebate of 200 pesos for vaccines with single receipt purchase of at least 3,000 pesos. This hardware, meanwhile, gives out free ball pens and pad papers for vaccinees who bought 5,000 pesos worth of goods.
Okay, pero okay din po kaysa po sa wala.
But Presidential Advisor for Entrepreneurship Joey Concepcion says some companies are planning to separate unvaccinated employees from vaccinated ones but have yet to make a final decision.
I won't discount the fact that there are certain buildings, you know, they might restrict the entry of those unvaccinated and ask them to go to a certain area, a meeting area, and not mix them with those who are vaccinated. Maybe elevators, no? Those fully vaccinated can enter this elevator, no? Those not vaccinated will take another elevator.
For Concepcion, segregation of vaccinated and unvaccinated workers should not be considered discrimination given the pandemic.
I've checked with our lawyers and they said that we're entering an area that is uncharted, no? In a sense. So I think it's also the right of the fully vaccinated to protect themselves.
But the government says there will be no policy to discriminate people who have not been or do not want to be vaccinated.
Vaccination is purely voluntary, but we're trying to get everybody to see the benefits na mabakunahan po kayo. So it's voluntary, it's not mandatory, and wala tayong policy na pag hindi na bakunahan, hindi makapasok sa ganito, sa ganyan. Wala po tayong ganyan klaseng discrimination.
Alvin El Chico, ABS-CBN News.
The Philippine Food and Drug Administration recently gave the go signal to administer Pfizer-BioNTech's COVID-19 vaccine to children aged 12 to 15 under an emergency use authorization. This was actually an amendment to an earlier approval for the same vaccine for 16 years old and older. But Health Undersecretary Maria Rosario Vergara says, while the DOH welcomes the approval due to the limited vaccine supply, the vaccination strategy remains the same. The prioritization framework, that should hold. So as parents wait for enough supply for their children to get vaccinated, let's talk about the apprehension some parents may have in getting their children vaccinated. Joining us now, Dr. Anna Ong Lim. She's the immediate past president of the Pedia Infectious Disease Society of the Philippines. She is also a member of the COVID-19 Technical Advisory Group. Dr. Ong Lim, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon. Good morning.
All right. So now, some parents, as you may understand, are wary of getting their children vaccinated against COVID-19. Should they be apprehensive? Are their concerns valid?
Well, Carmina, I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves because we're really not at that point where children will really be receiving vaccines. And with the current status of vaccine supply in the country, maybe what we should be focusing on is getting people who are qualified to be vaccinated so that they serve as a cocoon of protection around these children, whether they be toddlers, young children, or even the adolescents who are already approved under the EUA.
Mm. So give them that safe environment. That should be the focus now, exactly. Because the supplies aren't here.
That's right. So yeah. What we have right now is actually the COVAX facility donation, which is prioritized for our A1 to A3. So it's very unlikely that anybody who's 12 to 15 will actually be receiving the Pfizer doses, maybe unless they belong to A3, but that's still a topic of discussion.
Yeah, but it's going to happen at one point, right? And as we wait for that time, there are a lot of parents who are now excited, but there are also those who are eager, who are also apprehensive, as I said a while ago, about getting their kids vaccinated. On the part of the pediatricians, though, as you see things evolve, as you see things develop, what evidence have you seen that would make you throw your support behind the vaccination of children as young as 3 in China? We've heard about that news over the weekend. They have approved the use of Sinovac on children as young as 3. Dr. Ong Lim.
Well, pediatricians are really quite, I would say, supportive about vaccination as a strategy for containing infectious diseases. And that's particularly because of our very long experience with other vaccine-preventable diseases like measles or polio. So maybe what can happen is that as we are still waiting for stocks to become available in the Philippines, this delay of sorts will be our way of trying to monitor what's happening in other countries where more extensive rollouts have been happening, and we can use the information that they generate to our advantage.
Yeah, and you have been observing so far. What have been your observations regarding the vaccination of children?
Well, the experience has really been confined primarily to the Pfizer product because they're the only ones with an EUA for 12 to 15. And so far, this has been generally considered safe. And well, as with any vaccine, there are always reports of monitoring for adverse events. And these are still being compiled so that an assessment can be made as to whether they're causal or coincidental relationships.
Yeah, for parents who are still uncertain, tell us how different the vaccine makeup is for adults as it is for children. Are they going to use a different technology altogether? Is it just in the doses that's going to be different?
The vaccines that are currently being used for adults are also the same ones that are being tested for children. So at least for the Pfizer product, they're using the same dosing regimen. There are a lot of trials going on looking at younger age groups, younger populations, and different permutations. And I don't think we should be surprised if there may be some differing recommendations in the future, because the immune system of children does respond differently from that of adults, and we may have to tweak it a little bit to get the best response possible.
Yeah, so, but tell us, Dr. Ong Lim, are you confident enough of the advancement in the trials, in the research regarding COVID-19 vaccines on children as young as 3? Is this something that you are clearly looking into and are confident enough that when the supplies come, then you're confident enough that children should be able to be administered with it?
Well, Carmina, we don't really have a choice if we want to put it that way, because if the goal is eventually to control transmission of the disease, we will have to be vaccinating children. And that's actually what's happening already in those countries where they have basically saturated the more vulnerable members of the population. So that's why they're going now to the pediatric age group in an attempt to achieve herd immunity in the fastest possible time. Now, if the question is, are we confident that this is something that will help kids, that will be safe for kids, that will be efficacious. Those are really criteria that we require before any vaccine is rolled out, whether that's for adults, elderly, or children. And the system that we have right now safeguards that anybody who will receive the vaccine should have that assurance.
Mm. Let's zero in on Pfizer-BioNTech. The jabs use mRNA, and some parents are quite apprehensive about this. Some even are saying that this may just alter the DNA of the kids. What are your thoughts on that?
The technology utilized in the mRNA vaccines does not alter human genetic material. As the name implies, so this is RNA, what is present in our nucleus, which controls human cell function, is DNA. And just from that alone, we know that they are not compatible, so it is not possible to interact or intersect these two types of nucleic acids and have them incorporate into the human genome. The RNA only enters the cell cytoplasm or the body of the cell where it is supposed to be used for the manufacture of proteins which are targeted by our immune system for defense. It lasts over a very short period of time in the human body. It's cleared very rapidly. And so there's really no concern about being incorporated into the human genetic material.
All right. Glad you clarified that for us. As we wrap things up, I want to talk about the psyche. I know that your expertise is infectious diseases, but since we have sort of shielded our children by, letting them stay in our homes for more than a year now, they're not at risk of getting infected. But what does this whole pandemic, how has this impacted on the psyche of our children these days?
Well, their reactions are quite varied depending on their stages of development. I'm sure you've heard anecdotal reports of very young kids who are very strange or anxious because they haven't ever seen anybody outside of their families. And we also have hearing stories of adolescents who are having a little difficulty adjusting because of the social isolation. So these are really unintended consequences of the pandemic. And as caregivers, as parents, as significant family members of these kids, we really do need to pay attention to all of these, the impact of these containment measures. Because as we move forward and look forward to better or loosening of movement restrictions, then everyone, not just kids, will have to relearn some social behaviors and also consider how to interact safely because this virus is not going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah. And when the kids do get vaccinated, Dr. Ong Lim, how much of a game changer will that be for kids? And again, the preparation that parents and their significant caregivers should be doing at this point for that eventuality.
Well, Carmina, the immediate impact is really on the consideration of resumption of face-to-face classes. We know that kids' primary activity is going to school, and we look forward to having that happen again. So even now, there are already lots of discussions about how to safely resume face-to-face classes as the vaccination rollout is happening. So we hope that once we were ready, once we've achieved a significant coverage, that we can safely resume school for kids and provide them with this enriching experience that they missed over the past year.
Yeah, and how should parents and their significant caregivers talk to their kids about this? As we've said a while ago, it's been more than a year of, social interaction basically cut off because of this pandemic and the environment that they used to know that's no longer available to them. But we got to begin easing them in as well now that things are becoming to seem clearer as the days go by. So give us an example of how parents can talk to their kids about that eventuality of venturing out into their homes again, being with their kids, getting that shot eventually one of these days, doctor?
Well, maybe from the health perspective, I would encourage parents to continue educating kids about the ways that virus is transmitted, so that they can continue to protect themselves even as they start interacting with a broader range of people outside of their homes, no? Kasi we know that this is, again, not going to go away anytime soon. And even as they themselves might be vaccinated or the immediate family is vaccinated, or even the people in school are vaccinated, there's always this possibility of transmission happening. And we need to be constantly aware of that. I think that's really one of the new behaviors that people will have to learn. Maybe before we were not as conscious about the way we interacted with others, but now that cannot be the case anymore.
Mm. All right. We're going to have to leave it at that. Dr. Anna Ong Lim, immediate past president of the PETA Infectious Disease Society of the Philippines, also a member of the COVID-19 Technical Advisory Group. Always a pleasure talking to you. Continue to take care and keep safe.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. All right, moving on to more news. Davao del Sur Governor Douglas Cagas has passed away. We received news very early this morning. His family says the governor died of complications stemming from COVID-19 Thursday morning. Cagas had been in public service for more than 3 decades. He started as an assemblyman in the 80s. Our condolences. A COVID-19 surge now also being felt in Haiti. The spike in cases took the country by surprise, as it had been one of the few countries that had relative success against the pandemic. More in this report.
For more than a year, Haiti escaped the worst ravages of the COVID pandemic, reporting few cases and fatalities. It was a rare break for the poorest country in the Americas, which has so often been beset by misfortune. Until now, as some countries are already moving into a post-pandemic world thanks to vaccination campaigns, Haiti is grappling with its first serious outbreak, and the country has yet to receive its first batch of vaccine doses or administer a single shot. Doctors like Ronald Laroche are also sounding the alarm.
Toutes les structures de soins, publiques comme privées, sont dépassées.
All public and private sites are taking in patients. There's no room for any more. More sites must be opened to meet the needs of patients with breathing difficulties so as to avert a catastrophe.
Officially, Haiti has recorded nearly 16,000 infections and 333 deaths from COVID-19 among its 11 million people, relatively low case numbers compared to elsewhere in Latin America and the Caribbean. Yet data is limited due to low testing rates, and doctors say the real numbers are likely much higher. And local health officials are warning the upwards trend could prove catastrophic. President Jovenel Moïse, who at one point urged Haitians to drink unproven medicinal tea to ward off the virus, is now implementing strict public health measures.
We are taking measures to prohibit ceremonies, recreational activities, end of school year celebrations. Those activities are to be prohibited. These are measures taken by the government to protect students and educational personnel during this difficult moment where the coronavirus is causing real victims.
Poor sanitation means disease can spread fast in Haiti. Its slums are densely packed, and its already overwhelmed and inefficient healthcare system is dependent on fecal donations. Despite the threat, many locals still dismiss the virus as not a big deal or even doubt its existence, while other Haitians are fearful they could be exposed.
Even though we try to follow the indications to protect ourselves, it's not easy in Haiti. People are very close to each other inside trucks. If I am wearing my face mask, others do not. We are trying to respect social distancing, washing hands, using hand sanitizer. But in spite of all that, we don't feel protected.
Next week, Haiti should receive its first batch of COVID vaccines, 130,000 doses, through the World Health Organization's COVAX vaccination scheme, providing some hope in the race against the virus.
I'm going to take a break now. Coming up, another senator rejects the Isambayan's coalition's offer to become one of its presidential nominees. The details from Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us here on ANC. Here's still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Counter charges being eyed against the police by a whistleblower who ended up being charged in the vaccination slot for sale scheme. The U.S. will reportedly donate 500 million more COVID-19 vaccine doses to the world. And Philippine Senator Nancy Binay rejects the offer of the opposition coalition to become one of its possible presidential candidates. Back with more news, another politician declines to be the opposition coalition's presidential candidate for the 2022 polls. Senator Nancy Binay turned down the offer of Isambayan. Binay said she will not run for higher office in the upcoming elections. Senator Pantilo Lacson had earlier thumbed down Isambayan's offer to become one of its presidential nominees. The Communist Party of the Philippines admits it breached international laws after the landmine blast that killed footballer Keith Absalon and his cousin. The CPP's information officer said they will immediately provide full compensation for the families of the victims. The CPP adds it's making sure that the tragedy won't happen again and that members behind the incident will be held accountable. But Armed Forces of the Philippines spokesperson Major General Edgar Arevalo says it was not just international law that the rebels violated. Arevalo says the group committed murder and also violated the anti-terror law.
Ang ginawa nila isang malinaw na krimen. Ano, tatlong batas ang kanilang nalabag, yan ay naglalaan ng mabigat na kaparusahan. Dapat po isuko nila yan, hindi po maaari na reprimand lamang. Kailangan pong managot sila sa batas ng ating bansa. Sinasabi nila ngayon, sila ay humihingi ng paumanhin. At yan namang paumanhin na yan ay tagyat na tinanggihan ng pamilyang Absalon. At sinasabi nila, hindi dapat magtatapos sa paghingi lamang ng sorry. At hindi dapat kung magbibigay man sila ng sinasabi nilang indemnification, ay hindi nila tatanggapin ng pamilya Absalon ang anumang tulong na manggagaling dito sa kagawad ng mga teroristang grupong ito.
News overseas now. It's been weeks since Israel and Hamas agreed to a ceasefire ending 11 days of bloodshed, while the world leaders continue to discuss how to end the decades-long conflict permanently. It's the children of Gaza who continue to suffer. More in this report.
It's been 3 weeks since Susie Ishkentana was pulled from the rubble of her house in Gaza, destroyed by an Israeli airstrike. Her mother and four siblings are under the rubble. The six-year-old girl has barely spoken since, except to ask for her family, who were killed that day. Susie and her father are now living with her uncle, who said she barely eats, doesn't sleep well, and doesn't play.
الحكي خفيف صار عندها يعني كانت أنعمها يعني ودائما هي عندي في البيت كانت وأنا عندهم.
She doesn't speak a lot. I'm her uncle and she used to stay at my home a lot. She used to speak more, to be very active. She was a naughty girl. But after their home was hit and her mother was killed, the girl doesn't talk a lot, doesn't play a lot, and she screams whenever people reach out to her, even myself, her uncle, whom she used to spend a lot of time with. She screams when I get close to her.
دائما في حضني و24 ساعة عندي. البنت صارت كل ما اقولها تعالي اقول لك لما تصير تصرخ.
Half of young people in Gaza, around 500,000 children, could be in need of psychological support. That's according to officials from the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, who say 11 days of fighting in May between the enclave's Hamas rulers and Israel has left children traumatized. Susie's home was struck in a wave of Israeli attacks on Gaza City on May 16th. Gaza health officials say those attacks killed 42 people, including 10 children. Israel said those attacks targeted an underground tunnel system used by Hamas to transport weapons and that the houses collapsed as a result of the tunnel network crumbling. Psychologists have paid Susie regular visits to help her process her trauma. Psychiatrists say depression and insecurity are the most common psychological issues they see here. Around half of Gaza's population of 2 million are under 18. Many carry the trauma of three previous wars and several other violent conflicts fought between Israel and Gaza militant groups since 2008.
Over in Canada, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau pays tribute to members of a Muslim family who were killed in what police said was a premeditated hate crime. This report.
They were loved. I know they will be so deeply missed.
Prime Minister Justin Trudeau joined several thousand mourners in a vigil Tuesday evening in London, Ontario, to remember three generations of a Canadian Muslim family killed in what police said was a premeditated hate crime.
To this community, which has made London stronger for generations, and to all Muslim Canadians, we are with you.
On Sunday, four members of the Afzil family were killed as they were out on an evening walk near their home in London, Ontario. Police say a man rammed them with his pickup truck, targeting them because of their religion. The victims were the parents, their 15-year-old daughter, and their 74-year-old grandmother. Their 9-year-old son remained hospitalized on Tuesday with serious but non-life-threatening injuries. 20-year-old Nathaniel Veltman, who is white, has been charged with four counts of first-degree murder and one count of attempted murder. He was arrested on Sunday in a parking lot wearing a body armor-type vest about 0.3 miles from the London Muslim Mosque, which the Afzil family attended and where Tuesday's vigil was held. Canada's opposition leader Aaron O'Toole, other political leaders including NDP leader Jagmeet Singh, the first person of color to lead a federal political party in Canada, and Ontario Premier Doug Ford also attended the vigil. Omar Kamisa is the Community Engagement Officer with the National Council of Canadian Muslims.
They were just out for a walk, minding their own business after dinner on Sunday evening, and a man full of hate, anger, vengeance decided to run them over. This is a horrific attack, and we, as our souls are numb. We're hurt, we're in pain, we're sad. We don't even know how to process this.
The attack has caused a nationwide outpouring of grief, with similar vigils taking place in Toronto, Vancouver, and other cities across Canada. London, a city of about 400,000 people, has a large Muslim community and at least three mosques.
Taliban insurgents shoot dead at least 10 people at a miners' camp in northern Afghanistan. A warning to our viewers, this report contains graphic images.
A mine workers' camp in northern Afghanistan was attacked in the night. The Halo Trust said in a statement that an unknown armed group killed at least 10 of its Afghan staff. More than a dozen people were wounded. The agency said there were 110 workers at the camp, and an official said that most of the survivors fled to nearby villages. The Interior Ministry said the gunmen were Taliban insurgents, though the group denied involvement. After decades of conflict, Afghanistan is strewn with mines and unexploded ordnance. Agencies have been working to clear them in the years since the Taliban were ousted in 2001. The Taliban frequently attack demining workers because government officials say the workers often help to defuse roadside bombs that insurgents have planted.
A new controversial drug offering hope to patients dealing with Alzheimer's disease, but some doctors insist it is not a cure. Take a look.
I'm considered an entry level as far as dementia.
For 69-year-old Bill McKay, the FDA's approval this week of Biogen's controversial Alzheimer's drug offers hope that the veteran of 29 marathons can keep on running.
Let's work on just being healthy and trying to extend my life as far as it will go and do what I can.
His wife, Jill, is hopeful the treatment will prevent her husband, who was in the early stages of the disease, from getting lost along the way.
That's a big worry for me. I work full time, and so I'm not home during the day. You know, he goes out for a run. I wonder, you know, I'm going to get that phone call. You know, Bill should have been back 45 minutes ago and we don't know where he went.
Bill McKay already qualifies for Biogen's drug called Aduhelm, the first new treatment for Alzheimer's in nearly two decades and the first to target a cause of Alzheimer's by removing amyloid plaques from the brain. But the drug's approval comes with major asterisks. In two large clinical trials, Aduhelm showed a benefit in one, but not in the other. And a panel of outside experts said the data failed to prove that the medicine works. And some trial patients experienced potentially dangerous brain swelling. It's why his doctor, Michigan neurologist Kara Leahy, is adamant about cautioning patients not to look to Aduhelm as the holy grail.
So there is going to be a lot of important education that we discuss with patients with a realistic idea of what this medication is and what it is not. So to make sure that patients understand this is not a cure, that we are hoping that it has some ability to slow down the progression for patients, but that the learning about this medication is ongoing.
The FDA has required a post-approval trial to demonstrate that Aduhelm does in fact slow cognitive and functional decline, but that could take years. Its price tag, roughly $56,000 per year, although it's not yet clear how much the drug will cost patients like Bill McKay, most of whom will be covered by Medicare. Despite questions about the drug's effectiveness and cost, the McKays have gone ahead and scheduled an appointment with Dr. Leahy for next week.
And I certainly want to be active and certainly be part of my family life and be a plus to the general population in this area and anywhere else I could be of service to.
More than 900 medical centers will start intravenous infusions of the drug in as soon as 2 weeks.
In business, U.S. President Joe Biden withdraws a series of Trump-era executive orders that targeted WeChat and TikTok, heralding a new phase of relations with Chinese tech companies. The Trump administration attempted to block new users from downloading those apps as the Commerce Department reviewed security concerns. Biden's new executive order revokes the WeChat and TikTok ban. He also withdrew another order that targeted eight other communications and financial technology software applications. But the White House says a separate national security review of TikTok remains ongoing. The world is losing ground in the fight to end child labor. That's according to the United Nations as the International Labor Organization releases its latest report on the practice. The ILO says the number of child laborers has increased to 160 million in 2020 from 152 million in 2016. This means one in 10 children are working and millions more are at risk due to the pandemic.
People have resort to child labour almost as a survival strategy. And our estimations show that unless we act to stop it, we could see a further increase in until the end of 2022, of some 9 million in child labour. This would take us further in the wrong direction. But it's not inevitable. If we do the right things, if we invest in the fight against child labour, invest in social protection and income support.
We urge countries to expand income support measures like child benefits to get children back into school where they belong and to invest in programs that prevent and protect them from being exploited. It's time to get back on track.
The UN has made 2021 the International Year for the Elimination of Child Labor. It says urgent action is needed to meet a goal of ending the practice by year 2025. El Salvador becomes the first country in the world to adopt Bitcoin as a legal tender. And as this report tells us, the use of the cryptocurrency is seen to boost the country's remittance-reliant economy.
Queda aprobada la ley de Bitcoin.
Lawmakers in El Salvador broke into applause after voting to approve Bitcoin as legal tender on Wednesday, making the Central American country the first in the world to fully adopt the cryptocurrency.
Bitcoiners around the world, the time has come. We are ready.
The Congress approved the bill by a supermajority despite concerns the move could complicate talks with the International Monetary Fund, from which El Salvador is seeking more than $1 billion in financial support. One of the few lawmakers who voted against the bill expressed his misgivings.
Para unos audaz.
For some, this is bold. For others, irresponsible. But it's a bet as well as an experiment. I regret how this has come to pass and what's behind it, and I hope for the good of the community to be proven wrong.
In a tweet, President Nayib Bukele cheered the approval in Congress, which is controlled by his party and allies, one of whom echoed his exuberance for embracing the virtual currency.
Este es un paso importante para nuestro país.
This is an important step for our country, a step for technology, a step into the future to bring us financial inclusion, investment, tourism, innovation, and economic development to our country.
Regulators and policymakers all over the world have warned about Bitcoin's volatility and that it facilitates money laundering and other illicit uses. But Bukele, who proposed the law to make Bitcoin legal tender, has touted the use of cryptocurrency for its potential to help Salvadorians living abroad to send money back home. Bukele has even more ambitious plans for Bitcoin, saying later on Wednesday that he wanted to use renewable energy from the country's volcanoes to offer Bitcoin mining facilities, which generate new units of the cryptocurrency, and instructed state-owned geothermal energy firm Lajeo to come up with a plan to make it happen. Meanwhile, Bitcoin enjoyed its best day in 2 weeks following the vote in El Salvador, rising as much as 6% to more than $35,000.
Back here at home, the tourism department eases the terms of business loans being offered to establishments hit hard by the pandemic. The grace period for the interest-free soft loans has been extended to 2 years to encourage more micro, small, and medium enterprises in the tourism industry to avail of the loan program. The relaxed terms will also allow a second round of loans for employee retention and a maximum loanable amount of 5 million pesos. We're going to take another break now. Still ahead, another Filipino athlete qualifies for the Tokyo Olympics. The latest in sports when we return. Your Dateline Philippines here on ANC.
Charm fabric conditioner. Bangong kabloom.
ECS boom papaya. White rose papaya. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Boom putika. In 7 days. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. White rose papaya.
White rose papaya. Na may double whitening. Papaya extracts plus whitening ng vitamin B3. Clinically proven magpaputi in as early as 7 days.
Boom puti.
Botica. White Rose Papaya. Papaya puti. Papaya fast. White Rose Papaya. S-M-S.
Inat! Ang purpose ng dessert? Palamigin ng summer!
Homemade ice cream natin. Inesle all-purpose cream mo. Para rich, thick, and creamy.
Ice creamy na!
Galing natin ba?
Creaminess from the heart.
Sakura. Sakura.
Ang blooming na bango ng Sakura Blossom. Nasa Pride with fabric conditioner na. May Sakura Blooming Curls. Para sa labadang blooming sa linis, labadang blooming sa bango. For as long as 24 hours.
Blooming ka ha?
Uy! Blooming daw ha?
Para sa blooming na labada, Pride Sakura Blossom. Isakura mo na.
ACS.
2021 may be a challenging year, but it is also one filled with hope, friendship, and celebration. This year, we commemorate the 75th anniversary of diplomatic relations between the United Kingdom and the Philippines, alongside a very special birthday.
My name's Daniel Pruce. I'm the British ambassador to the Philippines. I do hope you can join us for our celebration of the 95th birthday of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. At 9:30 on the evening of the 10th of June, here on the ABS-CBN News Channel. Don't miss it. It'll be a great night.
The latest in sports, the Phoenix Suns once again dominated the Denver Nuggets to take a 2-0 lead in their NBA playoff series. Phoenix shot lights out in their Game 2 victory, 123-98. Six Suns scored in double figures, led by Devin Booker's 18 points. Newly crowned MVP Nikola Jokic had 24 points for the Nuggets. They need to turn things around as they head home for Games 3 and 4. Utah Jazz All-Star center Rudy Gobert is once again the NBA's Defensive Player of the Year. Gobert easily won the honor by getting 84 first-place votes. Philadelphia's Ben Simmons and Draymond Green of the Golden State Warriors finished second and third in the balloting. Gobert finished the regular season as the league's second leading shot blocker and rebounder. The 7-foot-1 center is just the fourth player in NBA history to win the award at least three times. Two of the world's greatest tennis players set for a showdown in the French Open. 13-time champion Rafael Nadal and top-seeded Novak Djokovic will clash in the final four at the Roland Garros after eliminating their quarterfinal opponents. Nadal dropped his set in the tournament for the first time in 2 years, but he recovered to beat Argentinian Diego Schwartzman.
I think I played a bad game there, and I know I'm going to have a tricky situation serving to not lose the set. No? So then he played well, I make a double fault. Well done for him. He's a great player, so should be a very tough match. No? And I needed to play a little bit more aggressive.
Djokovic followed Nadal in the semis with a thrilling win against Italian Matteo Berrettini. The two players had to finish the match minus the fans who were ordered to leave the venue in line with Paris's 11 p.m. COVID-19 curfew.
I didn't mind actually leaving the court because I felt like I needed a little bit of a break and reset. So. Yeah, it's unfortunate for the tournament, for the crowd to have that curfew, but we knew it before the match. The referee came up to us and said, you know, if it comes close to 11 o'clock, we'll have to enter the stadium. So that's what happened.
Skateboarder Marjolin Didal is the latest Filipino to book a ticket to the Tokyo Olympics. The 22-year-old will compete in the street skateboarding category. Vidal qualified because her current world ranking, number 13, automatically earns her a spot in the Summer Games. There are now 10 Filipino athletes who have qualified for the Olympics. These include weightlifter Heidelin Diaz, gymnast Caloy Yulo, and pole vaulter EJ Obiena. Recent U.S. women's winner Yuka Saso also expected to be included in that list. Vietnam reportedly planning to reschedule this year's Southeast Asian Games to 2022. State media said the country wants to postpone the regional meet as it grapples with a fresh COVID-19 outbreak. However, most member countries, including the Philippines, voted against the proposal. The games are scheduled to be held from November 21 to December 2. And before we go, the Hong Kong team behind the first robot citizen, Sophia, creating a new humanoid specifically for the COVID-19 pandemic. Meet Grace, a healthcare robot designed to interact with the elderly and those who feel isolated amid the crisis. Grace uses artificial intelligence to talk to a patient. It can speak in English, Mandarin, and Cantonese. Hanson Robotics says its presence is aimed at relieving the burden of frontline hospital staff.
Hi, my friend. Nice to see you. Okay, great. So while we talk, I will take your temperature reading and pulse with this little thermal camera on my chest. See? You are 36.6 degrees Celsius, by the way. No risk of COVID. Also, I note that you are responsive and aware, which is good, and then I share that important data back to the doctors and nurses at the institution.
And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to visit this episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.